Welcome to The Romance Show. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Love Magazine. It's called I Can't Stop Lying. Here's the story. With a heavy heart, I stood in my bedroom and gazed at the wedding dress hanging on the back of the door. Finally, I was about to have the wedding of my dreams. To the man of my dreams, or maybe not, maybe my lie ruined it all. I sighed and lightly touched the rows of seed pearls stitched on the beige satin gown in a pattern of small roses, then reached for the phone. Although I dreaded making the call, I knew I couldn't go into this marriage without being truly open and honest with my husband-to-be. I just hoped he'd understand and forgive me. The phone at the other end rang and rang, and I just about decided that he didn't have it turned on. But just as I was about to disconnect, he answered. "Clinton," I said, "it's Sophia. We need to meet right now. There's something I've got to tell you in person tonight." I hung up, shaking with fear, but knowing it was the right thing to do. It all started so innocently and for such a good reason, or at least I believed it was for a good reason. That fateful day, almost 2 years back, I went to pick up my daughter, Emma, early at her daycare. Once again, she had an asthma attack, and I rushed to her, leaving my post behind the lunch counter at the Four Corner Diner, my heart beating a million times a minute. The five-year-old was all the family I had in the world, and she was dependent on me totally. Because I had a little money and no health care, her prescriptions already took up a third of my monthly income. So not only was I constantly worried about her health and the increasingly bad attacks, but I knew another trip to the doctor or the ER would mean putting off paying the phone bill and the electric bill for another month. Luckily, by the time I got to the daycare center, she stopped wheezing and was sitting, pale and shaky, in a chair in the office. Even at 5 years old, she learned how to use her emergency inhaler properly, that is, and I gave her a big hug and looked at her with pride. "Come on, honey, let's go home," I said. She looked so frail, so small, as she clutched Miss Bunny to her chest. "I'm okay, Mommy," she said. "Can we stop at McDonald's first?" I looked down at her and my heart lurched. Is it possible to feel this much love for another person? I wanted nothing more than to hold her to me and keep her safe from anything bad that was out there. As we were about to get into the car, I saw a sign in the small red brick office next to the daycare. It was for a fuel company, and behind the office was a huge yard full of trucks. The sign read, "Receptionist needed. Apply within." I glanced down at Emma, and she did indeed seem fully recovered from her attack. Suddenly, I saw it as a sign from above. Maybe this is the break that could save us. "Honey Bunny, do you feel good enough to wait a minute while I get some information here?" I asked. She nodded her head and gave me a little smile, so I led her up to the stairs and into the office. Inside was a small waiting room, and I saw Emma down on one of the chairs and approached the desk. I noticed it was a lovely room with a beautiful circular desk made of polished wood built into one wall, and the soft chairs arranged along the walls were colorful and inviting. A young, casually dressed woman stood up from behind the desk as I approached, and I held out my hand. "Hello, I'm Sophia Keller. I'm interested in the position of receptionists. She glanced over at Emma, but I firmly remained silent, figuring they had to accept me as a single mother right from the start, or I didn't want the job. But to my relief, the woman smiled at Emma, even at me. "Wow, I'm so glad to meet you. We have quite an emergency here, and we need someone by Monday." She rolled her eyes a bit. "Our receptionist eloped yesterday without a word before she left, except a phone message saying she was relocating to Texas." I chuckled. Minnesota to Texas seems like a long commute, I guess. She nodded, "Yeah, and November in Minnesota is a busy time in the oil business." She held out her hand. "I'm Allie Colbert. My uncle Clinton owns this company, and I'm just trying to fill in until someone finds someone. Then it's back to college for me." She gestured to a seat next to her behind the counter. "Come on around and sit down. You can keep your eye on the pixie while we talk." I smiled gratefully and complied. "The job is 8:30 to 5, pays $12 an hour with medical and dental and 2 weeks vacation, also a pension plan. And it's here?" I waved my arm around the room a little. "Yes, it's basically answering the phones, talking to customers and drivers, and doing the payroll. Lots of routing of calls out to the yard, too. It's a one-person office, so it'll be just the office person and my uncle, who has an office in the back. But my uncle can handle it alone if he has to, if you need a day off now and then." "Emma goes to daycare right next door," I said. "Wow, cool," she said. "My uncle will pay for that." I was stunned. Medical insurance and daycare? This is too good to be true. "And we'll need to talk to your references. Your present employer will be okay if you've been there a while, and we'll need to know where you went to college. That's a requirement." My heart sank. College? Didn't she see me standing there in a waitress uniform? A woman of 23 with a 5-year-old? By no stretch of the imagination did I look like a college graduate. But then I looked over at Emma and thought of my 12-year-old Tempo leaking oil outside at the curb and made a fateful decision. "I went to Mount Mary," I said firmly. "Super," she said. "The job involves a lot of record keeping and customer contact. Uncle Clinton will be thrilled to meet someone with the ability to do it all. What was your major?" "Business studies," I said, hoping such a major exists at the small women's college. I drove by the old stone buildings many times, longing to be a student there. "And this is your daughter?" Allie asked brightly. "Yes, this is Emma," I said. "I'm a single parent." "My uncle is a widower," she confided. "Aunt Laura died a few years ago, and he has 2 teenagers of his own. He's very understanding in that regard." She handed me an employment form and told me I'd have to come back the next day, if possible, to be interviewed by Mr. Colbert. I quickly called Tom at the diner and asked him for a reference, then gave Allie his name. Luckily, he knew it was, or he would... Luckily, he knew I was looking for a job with health insurance, and although he didn't want to lose me, he couldn't afford to provide it for Emma and me. "I can still work weekends until you find another waitress," I told him. "The daycare is open 7 days a week, and I often work the weekend shifts to make more money." I resolved not to leave him in the lurch after finding another job. He was so good to me since Emma was born, almost like a relative. I would carry both jobs until he was settled, if I had to. Of course, if Whittington Oil checked my school record, they wouldn't be hiring me anyway. Not only didn't I attend college, but I had to drop out during my senior year of high school and settle for a GED. My hope was that I would be a valued employee before they found out the truth. But I felt more than a little guilty as we drove away. No matter how bad things got in the past, I always tried to keep my integrity intact. I've never lied to an employer before. I considered turning back and telling the truth, but one look at Emma dozing in her car seat made me continue on. Someday soon I will confess, but not right now. But right now I need the job desperately. The next day I met Mr. Colbert and lost my heart. He's a warm man, warm brown eyes, warm dark hair, and full of warm and kind words. He was casually dressed in a heavy sweater and khakis. I know I'm not bad looking, but he wasn't flirtatious or anything like that. Just nice, very, very nice. In fact, most of the questions he asked me were about Emma. I know employers aren't supposed to ask personal questions to women about kids and family, but I hear you have a daughter, he said. Yes, Emma, she's 5, I said. Allie tells me she's a really sweet that she's really sweet and goes to daycare right next door. That's very convenient for both of us, he said. I have 2 kids, 13 and 14, both girls, he said, Brooke and Brianna. He beamed when he spoke of them. Then it got awkward. And I hear you went to Mount Mary, majored in business. That's so perfect because I find that educated people do a much better job at the front desk. You will be the voice of Whittington Oil to all who call here, and doing the payroll can be a big job. Years ago, we had an employee who failed to fill out the tax payments properly, and we had to pay a large fine. I learned my lesson. Now, education is one of the most important things I look for in the office. Of course, being a good person comes first, honest and dependable. He smiled over at me. I think you are all of those things, and Tom Edwards gives you a glowing reference. I gulped and felt tears smart behind my eyelids. If he only knew what a worm I was. But I wanted to work there so much. I liked everything about him and about the job. It looked interesting and challenging, and it was truly the answer to my nightly prayers. He held out his hand. No more, Mr. Colbert, he said. Call me Clinton and tell me you can start on Monday. What could I say? I worked all weekend at the diner, saying my tearful goodbyes to both the customers and the other employees who were like my family for the past 5 years. And when Tom put a sign on the window on Saturday, we were all thrilled to have an experienced waitress new to the area come in and apply for the job just a few hours later. Everything seemed so perfect. I almost forgot that my new job was based on a lie. But on Monday morning, dressed in my only good skirt and sweater, it was like a dream come true. I threw myself into the work and even enjoyed it when difficult or angry customers called. It pleased me to calm them down and resolve their problems. The drivers were all older men with coveralls full of oil. And only one, John, was a grump. Each stopped in frequently to check on the daily routes, which we wrote on a map painted on a blackboard in the hallway, and they all usually greeted me with a smile, or often a wink as they passed the desk. All in all, it was a great place to work. With Emma right next door, I was able to pop over often to check on her, and we always ate lunch together at my desk. And of course, there was always Clinton, who ran around doing a million things and being nice to everyone he met. Far from being born with a silver spoon in his mouth, he inherited the failing business from his parents and turned it around completely. The business is now a success, mainly due to his good brain and hardworking, sweet personality. At least twice a week, he'd drop off a bag of food from the nearby restaurant for Emma and me to share with him at noon. He would pepper her with questions about herself and her day and really seem to listen to her answers. Emma soon adored him as much as I did. Well, maybe not quite as much. After years of almost no male companionship, I began to fall asleep thinking of Clinton. But it wasn't the sweet employer I was dreaming about. It was the man, his well-built arms holding me tightly, his tousled hair under my fingers, his body rubbing passionately against mine. He's that perfect combination of sexy man and loving and caring husband and father. I was constantly embarrassed by my feelings for him, and although he obviously was fond of me, he showed no interest in me as a woman. I knew that he's 30 years old and was married for 15 years before his wife tragically died of cancer. With each paycheck, I bought a few more professional clothes and began to feel more and more feminine and attractive. Without the costs of daycare or medicines, I was able to slowly save up money to buy a new car, and Emma's collection of books grew steadily. I almost was able to forget about the lie I told so that I could get the job. But one day, while Emma was showing Clinton her copy of Madeleine, Lost in Paris, I was jolted back to reality when Clinton commented, "You sure have used your education well, Sophia. It must have been a struggle for you to finish college, and you obviously passed that love of books and learning on to Emma." He looked at me with admiration shining in his eyes, and I was mortified. I wanted him to know that I'm a good mother, even though I didn't even finish high school. "I hope that someday soon you will get to know Brooke and Brianna. You sure are a good role model for young women," he continued. The smile faded from his face, replaced by a look of concern. "Are you okay, Sophia? You look a little peaked today." I tried to smile, but I knew it was a feeble effort. And although his touch of concern on my arm had the usual electrifying effect, the lovely mood vanished. I was more than halfway in love with Clinton and waited far too long to confess my shameful secret. The weeks passed, with the job growing more and more demanding as the weather worsened, and I continued to love it. Christmas was a week away, and it was the first Christmas ever that I would be able to buy nice gifts for Emma other than the usual coloring books and new pajamas. Clinton was hosting a party on the 23rd of the month for all the employees and their families, complete with a visit from Santa and the annual holiday bonuses. I didn't think I'd be getting a bonus, but I didn't care a bit because just having a good job was bonus enough for me. The biggest worry on my mind was what to wear to the party. It would be the first time I'd see Clinton's house, although I often saw the girls visiting their father at the office. Luckily, I was able to find an outfit for Emma that's very similar to mine. On the day of the party, we donned black velvet tops and red plaid skirts and drove over to Clinton's in great spirits, singing jingle bells at the top of our lungs all the way through the drifting snow. Clinton's house is a large old Victorian sitting on a bluff overlooking the river, complete with a wraparound porch. The double doors were decorated with two big wreaths, and each window held a small light. As we walked onto the porch, I could see a number of people milling around out inside. Emma was greeted by a group of kids of all ages. She initially clung to my side in shyness, but when Brooke came over to us and took her small hand, coaxing her, she let herself be led away to join the others in some game that involved throwing a Velcro ball at a reindeer target. I caught sight of Clinton and felt a flutter in my stomach. We exchanged a wave and a smile. He was wearing a beautiful olive green cashmere sweater and soft gray wool pants, and on his head, a red and white Santa Claus hat. He looked absolutely gorgeous and wonderfully sexy. I tried to hide my feelings by casually moving into the large parlor of the house and was awed by the biggest Christmas tree I've ever seen, holding hundreds of tiny lights and full of beautiful antique ornaments. I joined an older woman who was leaning over to examine them. Laura loved Christmas. She used to scour the antique malls and estate sales, collecting ornaments, she confided. She straightened up and smiled at me. I'm Lisa Wilson, Roger Wilson's wife, by the way. Roger was one of the truck drivers. I'm Sophia Keller, I said, the receptionist. Oh, Roger has told me so much about you, she said. He said you've got the office totally organized now, and Clinton's been looking happy and relaxed for the first time in years. We've all been worried about him. You're obviously good for the company. I blushed, but loved the compliment. Thank you so much for telling me. It's only been 6 weeks, and I'm still finding my way around. Well, it sounds like you're doing a great job. I hear you're a Mount Mary girl, which must be why you've got so much on the ball. She paused, and I hope she didn't see the flash of guilt on my face, but she continued with no sign of noticing my despair. Let's go and get you some eggnog, and I'll introduce you to the others. We've all known each other forever. It was great that the first person I met at the party is such a warm, friendly person. I relaxed, and in no time I was chatting with everyone in the room. It was clear from the conversation that Clinton and his family are well-liked and respected by all the employees and their families. Soon, there was a clatter in the hallway, and the air was filled with squeals of expectation from the kids. A man in a Santa suit appeared in the doorway, dragging a large sack, and most of the kids, including Emma, ran to their parents. I looked down at her glowing face. "Mom, it's Santa Claus," she whispered, pulling at my hand. "I see. It was so wonderful to see her so happy. What do you think is in that bag?" she asked. "I think you know," I smiled. "Have you been a good girl for this year?" "I tried really hard," she said. said. You sure did, I said. We turned to watch as Santa began to ho, ho, ho and greet the children. I wondered who was in the suit. It couldn't be Clinton because he was standing in front of the fireplace, arms crossed, beaming as he watched. I already knew what the gifts were. Since Allie and Clinton's girls were at the office, making a list of all the children who would be attending, and I helped them choose appropriate gifts for all of them. It's something Laura always did before her death, and I heard that during the 4 years since her death, Clinton hosted his Christmas party at a local restaurant instead of having the party at his home, as is the long-standing tradition. Everyone was glad that this year he and the family decided to celebrate at the house again. It's a lovely home, but a family home in all respects, with pictures on every mantel and tabletop and shelves full of small souvenirs and collections. Santa was calling out names, and one by one, the children went over and received a gaily wrapped package. Emma was overjoyed to receive a Madeline doll and book and held both to her body as if she were guarding a treasure. I was astounded to catch Santa's eye as he was leaving. I realized that he was really John from the driving crew. John, the grump who never had a smile or a friendly word, is evidently nicer than I knew him to be. In fact, when he saw my shock of recognition, he even gave me a little wink as he gathered up his empty sack and left the house. Clinton's daughters then brought out a guitar and flute and began to serenade us with carols, and soon we were all singing along and polishing off plates of cookies. As people began getting their coats and searching for gloves and mittens, Clinton went up to each employee holding a stack of envelopes and passed out the Christmas bonuses. I glanced over at Emma, who was sleeping on a brocade sofa near the fireplace, and began to gather up dishes and cups and carry them into the kitchen. I didn't want Clinton to feel I was expecting a bonus. As I was loading the dishwasher, I heard him saying goodbye to the other guests and busied myself with a sponge I found on the sink, wiping up coffee and eggnog from the table. I didn't hear his footsteps, but suddenly Clinton was right there, standing behind me. As I turned from the sink, I ran smack into his hard body. "Sophie," he said softly, gripping me by the shoulders as I stumbled. "I was looking for you. You don't need to clean up." He lifted a hand and idly brushed back a strand of hair that fell against my cheek, sending a shiver down my spine. Our eyes met and held together. For the first time ever, I saw him look vulnerable and soft. He bent his head a little, and to my astonishment, I knew he was about to kiss me. I held my breath, melting under his soft gaze. We stood frozen for a long moment. Then he murmured in a husky voice, "Merry Christmas." I saw he was holding an envelope crushed in the hand that was still gripping my upper arm. He didn't release me, but instead bent his head the last inch and softly kissed me. The kiss was just a whisper, but it left me shaken with emotion. Clinton suddenly pulled back a step, flustered, and ran his hand through his hair, pushing the Santa hat onto the floor. He stammered, "Here's a little gift to show how much I value your help." He handed me the envelope formally, then cleared his throat. "Thank you so much." I was speechless and just nodded and hurried from the kitchen and back into the front of the house, where I hastily woke Emma and almost ran out of the house. That night, I lay in bed and relived the scene over and over, feeling again his soft lips brushing mine and wishing I handled it with more sophistication. Instead of bolting from the room like a 16-year-old at her first prom, I obviously was reading too much into a friendly kiss between friends. Clinton is a warm man and never showed any interest in me as a woman. I thought, don't be a fool, Sophia. Yet, for a moment there, I believed I saw a spark of interest in his gaze that seemed like the kind of interest a male has for a female, and I held on to that belief and let it fuel my dreams. It was a perfect Christmas, the best one Emma and I have ever had. The weeks flew by, and I grew into the job more and more. Although I felt a thrill when Clinton walked in each morning, he showed no sign of even remembering the kiss and treated me in the same friendly way he always did. Even when we were alone in the back office, he was nothing less than totally professional. I told myself it was for the best. I needed and loved the job, and a romance with the boss might ruin it for all of us, or so I tried to make myself believe. March came, and the temperatures rose and brought the promise of spring. But I know what spring could be like in Minnesota, so I wasn't surprised when the end of the month brought a snowstorm bigger than any we've had all winter. The phones were ringing constantly with customers who hoped to make it through the winter without another oil delivery. But many fell short of oil just when the weather was at its worst. Added to that, we had a driver out with the flu and another attending a wedding in California, so there was no way the deliveries could be made that day. Clinton hurried through the office in his sheepskin jacket and heavy gloves. "I've got to take the truck out myself today," he said in a rush, filling his covered cup with coffee as he passed the pot. "I'm going to try to cover both runs." I looked at the blizzard outside the windows. "Be careful. The roads look dangerous." "That's the heating oil business," he said with a smile. "We're busiest when the streets are the worst." I grabbed the ringing phone, and when I had a chance to look up again, he was gone. The worsening weather made me tense with worry for the entire crew. Unfortunately, my fears came true later that afternoon when Roger Wilson came rushing into the office. "Call 911," he shouted. "Clinton's on his back in the yard." Trembling, I made the call, then ran outside to find Clinton lying partially under a truck, having slipped on the icy pavement while he was resting a hose into the tank. I think they meant wrestling. He was wincing with pain. The drivers were gathered around him with looks of concern. "Don't move him," cautioned John. "Something could be broken." It was difficult to hear him say that, and I began to shake even harder. The Whittington Rescue Ambulance took a long time to come, and we tried to keep Clinton covered and warm. He smiled weakly at me. "Call Allie if you can. I don't know if she can get here through the snow, but I don't want the girls to be alone." I made a quick decision. "Allie's more than 50 miles away, and the roads are bad. Emma and I can go over there tonight. It's no trouble." He looked at me with those soft eyes again and reached for my hand. "You don't need to do that, Sophia. It's asking too much. But if you could, I would be very grateful." I watched the paramedics take him away, saying a prayer that he would be all right. Then I collected Emma and carefully drove across town to break the news to the two very worried Colbert girls. They already lost one parent, and they were very tense knowing that their strong and seemingly invincible father was hurt. But the news from the hospital was good. He only pulled a muscle in his back and would be home in the morning. We made popcorn and watched DVDs in the family room, and I let the girls speak to their father when he called, and he reassured that he was in no danger. The next day, the weather cleared, and Allie brought Clinton home, stiff and limping as he slowly made his way up the stairs. She helped get him settled on the sofa, then apologized profusely to all of us. "I've got to go back in the morning. I've got midterms beginning on Monday." "That's okay," I assured her. "Emma and I can stay. The office is closed for the weekend, and by Monday I hope to find someone to come in and help out." "By Monday I'll be back at work," said Clinton firmly. 2 days of rest and heating pads will get me back on my feet, and I can take it easy at the office." We all looked at him skeptically. He was moving very slowly, barely being able to shift his body without moaning. I didn't know how he was even going to be able to get up the stairs to his bedroom, and showering seemed impossible without assistance. With a house full of women, I wondered what we were going to do if he needed any more intimate assistance. Everyone pitched in to help him, bringing him trays of food and coffee by the gallon and trying to keep him from hobbling around the house. He's an active man and didn't take well to being nursed. It was awkward for me at first to be touching him so much, helping him walk with my arm around his waist and buttoning his shirts for him. My hands shook as I felt the hard muscles beneath the fabric, and I tried to cover up my nervousness with a series of small jokes about his being attacked by the killer ice. True to his word, while the rest of us were sitting down on Monday morning, eating bowls of oatmeal with raisins and cream, he walked stiffly into the kitchen, dressed for work. Despite my protests, it seemed that the convalescence was over. But we both knew something changed between us. I caught him looking at me earlier while I did tasks around the house, when he thought I wasn't watching. I saw that look again and recognized it. It was male interest, and it made me tremble. I was in love with him and almost wished he did break something. I wasn't ready to leave his home yet, now that we were spending so much time together. April came, and with it the sun. All the workers were back and well. The time I spent caring for Clinton soon seemed like another dream. We settled back into our regular routine and spent no time alone together. Then on a Thursday night, when I usually had a sitter pick up Emma so I could stay late and prepare the payroll checks, he came into his back office where I was working. "Long week," he said, throwing his coat on a chair. "Emma with a sitter?" I was standing in front of the desk, putting the pay stubs into envelopes, my back to him. I murmured, "Yes." Suddenly, with no warning, his arms were around my waist, and he pulled me back against him. I instinctively laid my head back against his wide chest, my legs turning to jelly. It was like coming home to where I always belonged. There was no real sense of surprise, just intense pleasure and satisfaction. Clinton nuzzled the side of my neck and began kissing me behind the ear, sending an arrow of desire through my body. I made a small sound of approval, and he turned me to him. My arms circled his neck. "He is a terrific kisser," he gently rubbed his lips over mine. Then, as I quickly responded, he slanted his head and deepened the kiss. As his tongue swept into my mouth, I melted into his arms, and he groaned softly into my eager mouth. He moved one hand into my hair, holding me tightly against him. Our bodies were so close together, I felt the beating of his heart against my own, and I felt something else, his desire for me, pressing against my belly. I was lost in a sea of heavenly sensations. He moved his head to rain kisses on my eyes, down my face and on my neck. Finally, he came up for air and cradled my head against his chest. "Oh, Sophia," he said in a ragged voice, "it's been a long time since I've done this with anyone." "Me too," I said, "if he only knew." I had little experience with sex other than a few unsatisfying, fumbling encounters with my high school boyfriend, which resulted in my pregnancy. That caused the quick disappearance of my boyfriend and Emma's father from both of our lives. Since that time, I dated very little and kissed a few men, but it didn't progress beyond that. I had no desire to get involved with anyone who wouldn't be a good husband and father. Clinton was the first man I met who fit that bill. I was suddenly aching for more of him, all of him. He pulled back a bit and looked down at my face. "What do you want?" he whispered. "You, I want you." Luckily, he felt the same. He kissed me with the strength and passion that I matched, kiss for kiss. We fell onto the old leather sofa, his body half covering mine, and his hands roving over my body with abandon. His hand moved under my sweater until only my lacy bra separated us. Then he pushed that away as well and closed his eyes. I ran my hands up under his sweater and under shirt and found his warm, smooth back and felt his manhood pulse against my body. We smiled at each other and then he asked, "Do you want this?" "Oh, yes. Yes," I kissed him softly. Then I realized there was a problem. "I'm not on birth control, though," I admitted. He looked a little sheepish, then reached into his back pocket and pulled out two condoms. I was somewhat surprised, but very pleased. "I made a stop at the drugstore," he said. "Mighty sure of yourself, aren't you?" I kissed him again, holding his face between my hands. "I was hoping for the best," he said, reaching down to sweep the sweater and bra off my body. My back ached off the sofa. I've never felt anything so wonderful. We undressed each other frantically, continuing to touch and kiss, and when I reached down to touch him, he groaned and put his hand on mine, stopping me. "I want you so much. I'm afraid I won't be able to go slowly enough," he said. "I don't want slow." The desire was washing over me in waves, and I felt near to an explosion myself. "I want you now." "That can be arranged." He moved over me and caressed me until I urged his hand away. "Am I hurting you?" he asked with alarm. I was beyond words, but I smiled up at him and shook my head. I leaned up and kissed his shoulder, pulling him closer to me with my hands on his back. That first time, I found paradise in his arms, and he followed me into ecstasy almost immediately. Before that moment, I never understood how wonderful it could be to make love to a man. We lay together, neither wanting to move away, until desire built again. This time we were able to take it slowly. Clinton showed me what it's like to be adored, touching me intimately and kissing me everywhere until I was a mass of jelly and bringing me to heights of arousal again and again. Hours later, when we were both drained and thoroughly satisfied, he gently helped me dress, then escorted me to my car, where we stood and kissed and embraced. A week later, we went out to eat, and he presented me with a beautiful ring. "I love you," he said. "I never thought I'd find love again, but I want to spend the rest of my life with you, Sophia." "I love you too," I said, my heart bursting with happiness. We waited nearly a year before we set a date for the wedding, though, to spend time with all of our girls together and make sure they were all agreeable with our marriage. We needn't have worried, though. Brooke and Brianna dote on Emma, and she loves her big sisters and couldn't wait to move into Clinton's house. But during that year of shared holidays and birthdays and visits to church as a family, I always had the nagging doubts about my lie to Clinton. "You'll be such a good role model for the girls," he said, "as you are for Emma. Your education and experiences will show them how important it is to study hard and do well in school, and perhaps they will follow in your footsteps and go to Mount Mary. We should plan a visit there someday soon." I stayed silent, knowing I waited too long to confess. The lie was always there, sitting between us like a dark cloud of shame, as much as I tried to push it out of my mind. It was this eve of my wedding. Brooke and Brianna were waiting at home, their bridesmaids' dresses hanging under their plastic covers in their room. Clinton was off for a groom's night out with the two drivers who were standing up for him, and Emma was fighting sleep, too excited about the next day to give in to dreams. The tiny chapel at St. Peter's was already decorated and filled with flowers for our noon nuptials, and the caterers were set to serve a buffet lunch at Clinton's house afterward. Everything was ready, everything but the bride. Shortly following my call, I heard the doorbell and opened the door to see my dearest love standing there looking at me with worry. "Come in," I said nervously, stepping aside. I moved to close Emma's door and then led him into the kitchen so that she couldn't hear. He sat down, never taking his eyes off my face. "Please tell me you want to marry me," he said. "I want to marry you more than anything," I said, not meeting his eyes. He let out a gust of air and closed his eyes. "Thank God, it was all I could think about after I got your call." "Clinton," I began, and then looked down as the tears started. He reached across the table and took my hand. What is it? Tell me. Is it Emma? What's wrong?" I had to do it quickly, just spit it out before I lost my nerve. "I don't know if you'll want to marry me after I tell you something." "Sophia, honey," he got up and circled the table, then pulled me up into his arms. "There's nothing you can say to make me not want to marry you." He sat down in a chair and pulled me into his lap. "Now, what's this all about?" "I lied," I said flatly, still not meeting his eyes. "I lied and lied and lied ever since the first day we met." He was totally at sea. "Lied? About what?" "I don't want to make excuses for myself. I thought I had a good reason at the time, but there's really no good reason to lie." Unable to control my despair, I began to wail and covered my face with my hands. "I never went to college, Clinton. I just said that because I wanted the job and needed health insurance, and Allie said you would only hire college graduates and people you could trust, and you obviously can't trust me now because I'm just a big, fat, terrible liar and not a good role model at all. And now I love you, and Emma loves you, and she loves the girls, and I just should have told you a long time ago. I had to drop out of school and get my GED, and I always wanted to go to Mount Mary, but could never afford it, and I just let you go on believing that I went there. And I kept on talking about it, and I'm just a big fraud. I love you so much, and now I've just ruined everything for everybody. The last word came out almost in a shriek as I forced it through my tear-clogged throat. He patted my back as he held me, but didn't say anything. My heart sank, but I composed myself. Clinton, is that it? All of it? Yes, of course. Everything else was the truth. Everything? I got up from his lap and took his hands in mine. Clinton, I swear to you, that's the only lie I've ever told. He got up and stood at the kitchen, looking a little lost, then turned to go. Clinton, my world was falling apart and I didn't know how to make it better. Please talk to me. Soon, I'll be back. He kissed me briefly on the cheek and hurried down the hall and out the door. I roamed around the house. Thankfully, Emma was finally sleeping soundly in her room. The thought of telling her the wedding was off was dreadful, not to mention the thought of all the money both Clinton and I spent that could not be recovered at this late date. I couldn't believe how stupidly I acted. Clinton said he'd be back, so I sat down and waited in the silent room, wringing my hands and trying to stay calm. But more than an hour passed before I heard him return, and during that time I prepared myself for his refusal. He's a wonderful man, but I know he has his limits, and I know that he couldn't marry someone who would not be good for his daughter. I let him in, and we again went back to the kitchen. He was carrying a manila envelope in his hands and laid it on the table while he took off his coat. I waited, my heart in my mouth. He finally turned to look at me, and I was overjoyed to see the soft, warm look of love returning to his face. Here's a wedding present for you, honey. Nodding his head to the envelope, open it. I looked at him, puzzled, having no idea what was in the envelope, but the mention of the wedding gave me hope. Picking up the envelope with trepidation, I opened the flap. I held it in my hands and read the words with disbelief. It was a college diploma that Clinton obviously made on his computer, proclaiming that Sophia Keller was granted a BA degree from Whittington Oil University School of Business Management. The certificate had a gold lacy border and a shiny gold seal. I recognized it as one of the good job stickers. I kept it in my desk to put on Emma's work when she brought it to the office after school. I fell into his arms, sobbing. I'm so sorry, so sorry, I wailed. Then I gave him a watery smile. Thank you. This is the most wonderful gift anyone's ever given me. Now can I go to bed? He smiled. And get ready to marry my best girl? Yes, although I know I won't be sleeping much tonight. But let's make a promise to each other right now. Let's always be honest with each other, no matter what. Oh, yes, I cried. I promise. We both needed to get to sleep, but it was a long time before I could let go of him that night. That was 4 years, 4 wonderful years ago. I'm now a real college student, attending side by side with Brianna. I hope to graduate before our baby is born, but it may be a close call. No matter how many diplomas I earn, my first diploma will always be the best, and it will always have a place of honor on the office wall. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. This has been Volunteer Genios for Sun Sounds. Have a great week. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.